I love what I do. I love being a minister with and to you. I love the challenges of ministry every day. I love that I get to wake up every morning knowing that I'm going to be working on kingdom stuff, God stuff, gospel stuff, life-changing stuff, eternal stuff, people stuff, stuff that really, really matters. My work is not easy. I can't say that it's easy, but it's immeasurably rewarding. Now, aside from that, in general, I like work. I really do. I don't know if you do, but I like. There's something very satisfying about completing tasks. And Brenda will tell you that, you know, around home, I often get restless if I don't have something constructive to do. I like to be doing, you know, and I stay too busy, to be honest, but I like to be doing. Now, I don't like every task or everything about every task anyway. The curse of Genesis 3 about labor is a curse indeed, and I feel that. I don't like weeds. I don't like moles. I don't like sore muscles, and I don't like blisters on my hands, and I don't like distress from work. I don't like those things. There are times when I really want to do something fun with friends or family, and I can't because of work responsibilities. Something has to get done first, you know? And so, but having said that, really, work in general to me is very meaningful, and I hope you find work meaningful. We have to be careful because workaholism plagues Americans. But there's an equally prevalent problem that hinders us in various ways, and that is lack of initiative. Busyness is not the same as working productively. I was amused at these actual performance evaluations submitted by managers about their particular employees. One manager said, since my last report, this employee has reached rock bottom and has started to dig. Another said, this young lady has delusions of adequacy. Another said, works well under constant supervision and when cornered like a rat in a trap, you know. Another boss said, he sets low personal standards and then consistently fails to achieve them. And then one manager said, this employee is depriving a village somewhere of an idiot. Now, that's not very nice, but that's what was said. I'm afraid that too many of us choose to complain about our jobs and the work we have to do and the unfairness of life. And it's easy to blame our boss, our company, our parents, our schools, our government, or even God himself, rather than take personal initiative. Some assume a better future is just going to happen. You know, one of these days, I'm going to stumble into the job of my dreams, or I'll win the lottery or something. I'll pay off my debt, and I really will do something with my life. But life rarely works that way. That's a delusion. Proverbs chapter 6, if you want to open your Bibles there this morning. Proverbs chapter 6, as we continue our study to try to foolproof our lives, to protect ourselves from becoming fools, but to be wise. Proverbs 6 paints contrasting pictures to warn us about laziness on the one hand, and then on the other hand, to stimulate us to be industrious for success. And so the first picture is to beware of the slimy path of the sluggard. Now that sounds pretty harsh language, but sluggard is the imagery that's used in Proverbs to warn against the lack of initiative. It's related to the word slug. You know what a slug is, don't you? Those slimy, snail-like creatures with no shells. They leave this kind of slimy trail along, you know, where they've been slowly, almost imperceptibly moving, seemingly to purposely crawling along to nowhere. You know what I'm saying? You know, they're just, so a sluggard is what pictures the lazy person in Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 6, verses 9 through 11 portrays the sluggard this way. When will you get up from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come on you like a bandit and scarcity like an armed man. Now already, you can see that some of the consequences of being lazy, it's financial distress, right? That's one of the big things that comes. But Proverbs 20 verse 4 warns, the sluggard does not plow in season, so at harvest time, he looks but finds nothing. You know, and that's basically what happens. So it's easy to start slithering down this path of the sluggard. One sign that you might be becoming sluggardly in your life is procrastination. Duck. Okay, you better duck because that probably hit, you know, was aimed at a lot of people, you know. Do you ever say to your children, please take out the trash? Or set the table or clean your room. And the reply comes back, at the next commercial. Or as soon as I shoot down one more alien, you know, and then I'll have top score. When I get off the phone, you know. Anyway, we learn early in our lives to put off responsibilities for immediate pleasure, for self-gratification. But the consequences increase in life. And with the responsibilities that come in life. And so we need to teach our children to not procrastinate. Now, when we put things off, most of the time, it cheapens the quality of our work. And it increases our personal stress, because now we got to scramble to get it done. And then the effects, it affects the respect that others have for us. Procrastination often causes a chain reaction of burden for other people who are waiting for you to get your job done so they can get their job done, or they have to cover for you because you didn't get your job done. And that happens. That's a sign that you're heading down the wrong path. A slimy path is also marked by excuses. Maybe you've heard the top responses given by employees when caught sleeping at their workstation. Someone said, "Oh, they told me at the blood bank this might happen." Someone else said, "This is just a 15-minute power nap like they raved about in that time management seminar that you sent me to." Someone said, "This is one of the 7 habits of highly effective people." Someone must have put decaf in the coffee pot today. I don't know what's wrong. Why did you interrupt my meditation? I had almost figured out the solution to our biggest problem around here. You know, that cold medicine I took last night just won't wear off. Here's the one that I always say when I'm caught sleeping at my desk. Amen. Dan, you can try that. We make up all kinds of excuses for why we neglect to do important things right away. We're too busy, we're too tired, too distracted, whatever it is. The sluggard quoted in Proverbs 22:13 conjures up this excuse. There's a lion outside. That's why I'm not doing it. I'm not getting there's a lion outside. You know what? Even if there is a lion out there, the job's still got to get done. You got to face the challenges. Another sign of being on the slimy path of the sluggard is no follow through. Good intentions, voiced commitments, even good starts really don't guarantee a good finish. In a humorous exaggeration, in Proverbs 19:24, depicts this lazy man sitting down to eat. And it says, the sluggard buries his hand in the dish, and he'll not even bring it up to his mouth. That's pretty lazy, you know? He's too lazy to eat. Proverbs 12:24 says, diligent hands will rule, but laziness ends in slave labor. We got to just follow through on our commitments. And then one more indication of the sluggardly path is low quality, poor product, poor performance. The sluggard may do just enough to get by. He never takes the initiative to excel. He's satisfied with things done halfway or half-heartedly. It's good enough, you know. His life and work are revealed by the status quo and eventual decline. And it just kind of creeps up on you. And it's pictured well in Proverbs 24, verses 30 and 31. I went past the field of the sluggard, past the vineyard of the man who lacks judgment. Thorns had come up everywhere. The ground was covered with weeds, and the stone wall was in ruins. That's just neglect, you know? That's poor quality. Poor quality. Now, after this description of the sluggard, you might be thinking, are you kidding? Slothfulness is the last thing I would ever be convicted of. I mean, I'm way too busy. You'll never find me sitting around with folded hands. You know, I wish. I don't have time for that. And it's true. Most of us probably look a whole lot more like the Energizer Bunny than we do a slug. But before we conveniently excuse ourselves from any application here, may I warn you of selective sluggardliness, okay? Where we reserve particular areas in our life where we really take no initiative. We're not doing what needs to be done. Like the dad who sets sales records at work, shoots a 4 handicap on the golf course, but neglects the emotional needs of his wife and children. Or the mom. I mean, she pours herself out on the job and, man, she makes a wonderful home for her family, but she fails to make time for a relationship with God. It's the excellent student, excelling in all the courses, except there's just one subject that she doesn't really like. The one she needs the most to stretch and grow in, but she kind of doesn't work too hard at that one. It's the guy who works hard and earns lots of money, but doesn't take time to manage that money well. It's the church member who faithfully attends worship Sunday after Sunday. They're here, but doesn't have a plus two. No small group. Seldom volunteers for ministry. So what can we do? What can we do to avoid the slimy path of the sluggard? Well, Proverbs 6 tells us, enroll in the Ant Academy. That's where you can learn about it. You know, that's the wisdom of Proverbs 6, verses 6 through 8. Go to the ant, you sluggard. Consider its ways and be wise. It has no commander or overseer or ruler, and yet it stores its provisions in summers and gathers its food at harvest. You want to learn about initiative? Then study the industrious little ant. Observation will reveal a handful of lessons that lead to a prosperous life, avoiding the consequences of laziness. You know what? You'll never see an ant sunbathing when it's supposed to be foraging food or digging a tunnel. You ever see that? You'll never hear an ant complaining to management about work conditions. Ants just instinctively work hard and long. It's their life. It's for survival. It's for the colony. It's the way of that God made them. Work is good for the ant, and work is good for us. It's good for us. So the first lesson we can learn from the ant is to value work. Work is a gift from God. It really is. We're designed for work, to be productive. And yet recent polls indicate 95% of U.S. workers hate their jobs. Don't like their job. Why do so many hate work? Well, the answer can be found in Genesis. In the beginning, we find God at work. 6 days, He did the work of creation, and He made us in His own image. He designed us for creative expression like Him. So to work is to be like God. And immediately, God gave man work responsibility. Did you notice in chapter 2, verse 15 of Genesis, tells us the Lord God took the man, put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and take care of it. So work was not initially considered a bad thing at all. Not a burden to endure. It was a blessing from God. It was a good thing. And so Adam, he jumped right in. However, Adam and Eve disobeyed God, resulting in a broken world where work suddenly became toilsome labor instead of a blessing. Genesis chapter 3, verses 17 through 19 explains, to Adam he said, because you listened to your wife and ate from the tree about which I commanded you, you must not eat of it. Cursed is the ground because of you. Through painful toil, you'll eat of it all the days of your life. It will produce thorns and thistles for you. You'll eat the plants of the field. And by the sweat of your brow, you'll eat your food. We understand that. We live that every day. I mean, every time you go out to the garden, you know, and you're watering the flowers, you like those beautiful flowers, and then there's weeds. I mean, where do those things come from, right? It's there. Are you like me? You start a 20-minute repair job at home, and it turns out to be 2 hours. You know what I mean? It happens all the time at my house. Right after Brenda and I were married, we were at her parents' house. And when we arrived, we found out the kitchen sink was clogged up. So we were trying to maneuver around that. So next day, everyone went off to work. I decided to be the hero, and I would unclog that sink. And I had done that kind of thing before. I knew what to do. I got the snake and everything, and I worked at it, and I worked at it, and I worked at it, and I worked at it without any success. I worked all day, crumpled up under that sink. I had it all apart under there. I'm down under there working all day, and I could not get that thing free. Irma Lee came home late in the afternoon. First thing she saw was my wallet that I carry in my back pocket. She saw my wallet all the way across the room under the dining room table. And she just started laughing because she knew. See, that wallet had gouged my rump when I was under there working and trying to get all this done. And I was so frustrated and aggravated about not succeeding with that clog. I had finally at one point got it and I tossed it across the room. Exasperation. Genesis 3. We had to call the plumber. I was reminded of the curse, but there's more to that story. You know, because of a sin-altered world, because of our sin, things don't work like they should. Work's not always going to be enjoyable. We can get some satisfaction out of it, some productivity out of it, but it's not going to be easy. Computers will sometimes lose all your data. You know, bosses will put unnecessary pressure on you. Customers, they'll just be so nasty at times. Competitors, they will step on you to get ahead. Mothers-in-law will pour wallpaper paste down the kitchen sink drain. It was like concrete in there. That's why I couldn't get it through. Irma Lee. That's what happens. In spite of all those things, though, essentially work is good. We're designed to work, and it can be very valued and productive for us. It's an opportunity for creative expression, for productivity, for survival, for ministry to others, teaming up with others, glorifying God. And so we can become quite industrious when we really value work that God gave us to do. Secondly, be internally motivated. Ants don't have taskmasters cracking the whip or supervisors holding them accountable. They're internally motivated. What about you? Do you need someone always looking over your shoulder? Make sure you're doing the job. What do you do on the job when no one's looking? What do you do? Colossians chapter 3, verse 22 teaches, obey your earthly masters in everything and do it not only when their eye is on you to win their favor, but with sincerity of heart and reverence for the Lord. Now, accountability is important. We need that. That's just our world. We need it. But I'll tell you what. Give me self-motivated, self-disciplined, self-starters every time. I love that. I love that. They'll get the job done. And you know what? In the church, I love volunteers who are internally motivated to serve. Joel and Maggie Underwood came into this congregation, and man, they jumped in. They're helping with children's ministries and worship ministry. They're hosting. They have a life group. They just jumped in. Man, I love that. I love that. They take initiative. That's what we need. Third lesson from the ant is diligence. Have you ever watched ants work? I mean, have you ever just sat there and watched? They are not easily deterred. Nothing seems to stop them. I've seen tiny little ants pulling chunks of food much larger than they are back to feed the nest, to feed the colony. I had on film, but I lost it on my phone one time. But I videoed this ant carrying a dead carcass of a bee that was 10 times the size of the ant, pulling it back to the nest, wherever it was going. So they'll do that. But have you ever seen the superhighway of ants? You know, there's a whole chain of them. They're heading some, you know, and they're just going. They're busy going. They're just, have you ever tried to put an obstacle in their path, a little twig or a pebble or something? You know what they do? They reroute. They find a way. They just keep going. They're hardworking. They're diligent to get it done. Proverbs 21:5 encourages, the plans of the diligent lead to profit. Proverbs 10:4 says, lazy hands make a man poor, but diligence brings wealth. Basketball superstar Michael Jordan, perhaps the best basketball player of time, testified, I've missed more than 9,000 shots in my career. I've lost almost 300 games. On 26 occasions, I've been entrusted to take the game-winning shot, and I missed. I have failed over and over again in my life, and that is precisely why I succeed. Perseverance, diligence, you'll succeed. Another lesson in initiative is to be committed to quality. Ants never seem satisfied to do things halfway or last minute. They go all out and they accomplish amazing feats. They're impressive. Thomas Watson, founder of IBM, said, if you want to be a big company tomorrow, you have to start acting like one today. You know what? If you want a promotion in your career, if you want a promotion, it starts with earning it by your quality work today. That's where it comes from. Proverbs 22:29 illustrates. Do you see a man skilled in his work? He'll serve before kings. He'll not serve before obscure friends. He's going to be noticed because he's doing a good job. Committed to quality. Final lesson I want to call your attention to from the Ant Academy is to know the goal. Always keep in mind the goal. The ant is purposeful in all he does all day, every day, over and over. He's fixed on a singular priority. Gather and store food. Gather and store food. And it's survival for the ant and for the whole colony. And the mission is clear and it propels each ant through each day. Now for us, work is not just a matter of survival. It's important for survival, but it's not just a matter of that. It's not for making money and a good life, although that's nice, that's good. But we have a more significant goal that compels us to be industrious, to work with excellence, a God-centered objective that transcends us, something that is eternal in its significance and life-changing in its impact. Here it is, Colossians chapter 3, verses 23 and 24, challenges. Whatever you do, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for men, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving. Do you get that? When you're working for your company or wherever you're working for Jesus. Everything we do is for Jesus. When you're cleaning up around the house or cutting your grass, when you're helping out around here at the you're doing it for Jesus. We should approach our responsibilities as glorifying Him. You want to give Him half-hearted effort? Is that going to be good? One Sunday, a guy complained to me after the service about his job and his working environment. His co-workers were vulgar. His boss was mean and antagonistic. His work seemed insignificant. He hated it all. He was bitter that he had to work on some Sundays as well. That frustrated him because he'd rather be here. And I just smiled and I, first of all, praised God that he had a job. And then I encouraged him to view his workplace as a mission field. You know, and I said, go to work with a joyful attitude and a spirit of anticipation about what God's going to do there. Ask the Lord to help you have an impact. Do your work with vigor and joy and excellence as if you're doing it for Jesus Himself. And then share your faith when you have opportunities with the guys at work. And that kind of spooked him. And he grumbled that the guys at work didn't really want anything to do with Jesus or the church. And he said, I said, how do you know? Maybe they've never even encountered an authentic Christian. They don't even know what that life looks like. You got a chance to show them. Maybe no one has ever shared the gospel of Jesus with them before. Maybe you need to start a conversation. Oh, they'll never change. But I remind them, it is Christ. He's the one who transforms a person, so present Him. So he decided he would go to his less than perfect job and he would start seeking to glorify the Lord. He would make it his mission. I mean, it turned him around. He started loving going to work. And he would tell me stories about what was happening and his testimony there. It changed everything for him. And God is the reason we should be industrious and do excellent work. God is industrious. He takes initiative. We made ruins of the good life and the world that He gave us. We made ruins of it with our sin. But God didn't just sit back and let us remain condemned. He went to work. Painful, costly labor to save us by the means of Jesus' death on the cross. For God so loved the world that He gave His one and only Son, that whoever believes in Him might not perish but would have everlasting life. So I want to ask you today, will you take initiative to accept His grace to be saved? It's His work that saves you, not your works. It's His work that saves. But in response to that grace, then will you devote your life to live and work and serve for Him? We have an opportunity during our encounter time here. If you want to give your life to Christ and be baptized today, accept the Lord as your Savior and as your King, as your Lord in your life. If you'd like to come today, get a new start in that way, we'd love to receive you. I'll meet you down here in the front. Just come on up. And during this time, those of you who have that salvation, love to rejoice in that. We've set up the tables in the four corners of the room where you can observe the Lord's Supper and give thanks to His grace, to the work He did to save you. Because He values you. And so if you'd like to celebrate that with us, and maybe as you're meeting around that table, maybe you can talk to Him a little bit about your work, what you're doing for Him. You can serve yourselves whenever you're ready.